There's a lot to unpack in that very short clip. But I know what you're thinking. Whew. Nobody died this week. At this point in the story, Forrest Gump has accomplished much. Did you see that list he read off? What a good life. And well, the funny thing is, amongst all those accomplishments, Forrest now has something he's never had in his entire life. Money. Remember? He grew up kind of poor. His mama had to run a boarding house and take in strangers just so they could make ends meet. And now all of a sudden he's got, well, he called himself a gazillionaire. He's got money. And I know that when sometimes you grew up poor and then all of a sudden you've got money, you tend to have a very unhealthy view of money. So I'm impressed because he has a very healthy view of money. There's only so much you need, and the rest of it is, well, he called it showing off, but really what he was doing was he was spreading it around. And well, Forrest shared his wealth, and he shared it with God. Where was the first place he said he gave his money? Gave some to the church. Amen, Forrest. I can get with that, but that's not today's sermon, by the way. Give money to the church is not today's sermon. He gave some to his community. He helped build a hospital to take care of the physical needs. And he gave some to his friends. Yeah, that would be Lieutenant Dan. We'll talk about him in a little bit. And, well, he gave some to Bubba's family. And remember, Bubba was his military friend that died in Vietnam, but gave him the idea of being a shrimping boat captain. And so he thought it only fair that he take care of his family. Here's the thing, though. All of his accomplishments and the money, did you catch the end of the clip? It wasn't enough. He's still sitting there, and he's unhappy. And, of course, he saw the solution to happiness. His lifelong sweetheart, her name was Jenny. And Jenny blows in and out of Forrest's life a few times. And we'll talk more about Jenny next week. What I really want to bring in the idea of work. You see, this sermon is not going to be about riches. We're going to talk about your riches in a few weeks. This week we are talking about work, and I really want you to pay attention to two little interesting facts in the middle of that. When he was out there, did you notice how he never went back to work for Lieutenant Dan? You know what's funny about that statement? What was the name of the company? Bubba Gump. Lieutenant Dan wasn't in charge. It was Gump's company, right? But yet he saw himself as working for Lieutenant Dan. The other thing I want to point out, because we're going to be talking about work this morning, and I realize a lot of people are like, well, I don't work, I'm retired. Well, Forrest saw himself working for the city, even though he didn't make no money at it. What did he say? He cut that grass for free. They weren't paying him to do it. He just was doing it. So this morning, you can basically decide which word you want to put in there. You can put the word work, or you can take out the word work, and let me give you another really churchy word that we can throw in there. You can take the same principles we're going to put with work, and you can put in the word ministry. Either way, it'll work. Now, Forrest enjoys what he's doing. He's doing it for free, and well, again, it doesn't fill the void, though. He's unhappy. Of course, he's not the only one that's unhappy. Remember, this is a dual sermon series. We've got one teacher, Forrest, who's kind of more modern day, even though that movie came out. Oh, my gosh, I realize we're getting ready to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Forrest Gump. I feel old. I feel really old. Okay. You know, my kids are like, yeah, VHS? That's when it came out with VHS. Kids don't even know what that is these days. Okay. And then we have our other teacher. His name is Solomon. And Solomon is, shall we say, a little older by a few thousands of years. And, well, Solomon is also not a happy man, although he's even better off than Forrest. He's got great wealth. He's got great power. He's a king. And he's got great wisdom because God gave it to him. However, in the middle of everything that these guys have, whether it's Forrest or Solomon, their common thread is they have a problem. What is my problem? What's the point of all of this? I mean, I was born, and yeah, someday I'm going to die, and there's days in between the two episodes. What is the point of this thing we call life. Now, Forrest just kind of went wherever the wind blew. Solomon decided to chase the wind. He went on a lifelong quest to find the meaning of life, and he began to try different things. And so if you've been joining in with this, you also know, you know, he already tried pleasure. He tried the party cruise, and, well, that didn't work. And, well, he tried the intellectual part of it. He tried to understand humanity by understanding humanity, and that about drove him crazy. And so today he is going to try work. What is work? You know, my dad is never going to leave me a fortune. I know it's not going to happen. But I want to tell you something. He did pass one thing down. He left me something that's incredible. I have a work ethic. Trust me, you never want to try to outwork me. I'll exhaust you. I got an engine that won't quit. And my dad taught me the value of work. Work is an activity involving mental or physical effort done in order to achieve a purpose. Oh, this sounds hopeful. Or a result. Work is a task or task to be undertaken, something a person or thing must do. Work is must be engaged in a physical or mental activity in order to achieve results to do work. Work is important. Work is there for us, and it's important to know that Solomon is not working for money. When Solomon goes on his work quest, he doesn't need another dime. He's a silver spoon kid. He's got all the money he would ever. He is the son of King David. He's got enough money, but he decides, you know what? Maybe my problem is I've never worked a day in my life. So how about I go do some work? How about I be a common folk and just go out and get a job? Maybe that's what I'm missing. But he didn't find the answer in work. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 17 says, "So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it's meaningless and chasing after the wind." So getting a job didn't solve his problem. However, he did learn something from work. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 24 through 25 says, "A person can do nothing better than eat and drink and find satisfaction with their own toil. This, too, I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment?" So this expedition into work at least brings Solomon back to the idea of, well, work is only pleasurable if you've got the idea of God tucked into it somewhere. And I guess that sort of makes sense, because guess what? Humanity has been working since the day we got here. This is what God said in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. "The Lord God took man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it." You are designed to work. You're not designed to do nothing. It doesn't work for you. You'll become bored and lazy, and trust me, you will find something to do. It's just that something may not be a good thing. You're designed to work. However, this thing came into it, remember, Adam and Eve decided that they wanted to do things their way instead of God's way. God said, don't eat. Eve ate. Adam ate. Sin entered the world. And sin changed the idea of work. Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. "By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and dust you will return." Folks, sin changed the idea of work. In the garden, Adam and Eve were there to care for the garden. After sin, it was no longer about care. It's about survival. Anybody here ever have a job that you don't like? Whether it be in the world or in the church. You ever had one of those jobs? The manager's a jerk. Your coworkers are a jerk. The work is boring. You don't like what you're doing. You're like, oh my gosh. You understand the reason you keep going to that job is because they give you a paycheck. Because work changed. No longer do I work because I care about what I'm doing. I go because I'm trying to survive. By the way, this works in the church too. You ever had a ministry that you never, that you got involved in that you never really wanted to be part of? But you keep doing it. Why? Because somewhere in your brain, you've convinced yourself, if I don't do it, the church will die if I don't do it. So we start working for survival instead of for care. And that changes work. You see, it was going to be frustrating work. After sin, God said there's going to be thorns and thistles and weeds and all this stuff that's going to get in your way and all these things. You no longer can care. It's going to be frustrating. I know that one. I know what that feels like, to just be frustrated with what you're doing. Why? Because the thorns, the thistles, and the weeds are choking out your results. And you don't see what you want out of it, so you get frustrated with it. It's going to be never ending. That verse I read you from Genesis chapter 3, verse 19, it should have just like drove a dagger in your heart, because you realize what God just told Adam and Eve, right? Humanity, you're going to work yourself to death. You're going to work from the day you're born until the day they put you back into the ground. It's all going to be about work. And so it's very natural for us to head down this path to look for purpose in our life by that which we do, our employment, our paycheck. You see, while mankind was given the responsibility for what God had given them, here's one thing we forget in our work. Our work was never supposed to be the focus. When God put Adam and Eve in the garden and said, care for it, did he say care for it at the expense of the relationship with me? Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, when the thing that they cared for became more important than the thing they were supposed to care for, that's what created the sin equation. Because they decided the creation was more important than the creator. And down the path they went. It's a sad story, isn't it? It is. But it's a sad story that Solomon found some very practical conclusions that I would like to pass on to you from our teacher, Solomon. I'm over in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 7 through 9, so you might have to turn a couple of pages really quick. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless. And I love what it says here. A miserable business. Can you just read that and it just sounds like your life sometimes? I go to work and I 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 look at the checking account and I still don't have enough. I go to work and I do and I do and I do and I do and it's still not enough. And I find that work begins to consume all of my time, and then I get to the point and I look around and, well, work minus relationships equals miserable business. We have a term that came into existence in 1971. By the way, yesterday was my wife's birthday. She's home sick today. She was born in 1971, so I guess this is a time that this definition came in. It's called a workaholic. You ever been called a workaholic before? I've actually been called that before. A workaholic, a person who works a lot of the time and finds difficulty not working. You think we had a pandemic when it came to COVID. We have a pandemic when it comes to this. We have become people that are obsessed with work. Work can actually become an addiction, where we just can't be satisfied unless we have something to do. But when you have this disorder, this disease, I guess if you want to call it that, this focus in your life, eventually you get to the question of asking, what's the point? Man, I am working all these hours, and I'm working all of these days, and I'm doing all of this stuff, and I'm hoping that someday I'll be able to retire. And you know what? Who even knows with the way I'm living my life whether I even make it to retirement or not? What's the point of working? Maybe I should just go get a tent and pitch it out in the ground and just not work anymore and just sit back. G. Jesus approaches this topic in a parable that he called the rich fool. And at the end of the story, the rich fool, Jesus says the question becomes, whose things will then be? What, whose things will, I got a typo there. Oh, I'm sorry. Whose things will they be when it's all done? Now, we'll talk about that a little deeper in just a moment. We'll get back to the idea of the things because I don't want to chase a rabbit trail. I want to go on to the other thing that Solomon learns about work. Work will never provide contentment. Solomon tells us in verse 8, there was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. Now again, we're going to talk about your things in just a couple of weeks. I'm giving you advanced warning. 2 weeks from now, we're going to talk about your things and your riches and how we obsess over those things. But let's just stay on topic because Solomon wants you to understand that this thing called work, it's not going to fill the void. You know why? Because no matter how many things I cross off my to-do list, it never seems empty. Anybody agree with that one? I don't care how many things I accomplish in a day. When I get to the end, there's still more things on my list that need to be done. It's frustrating. No matter how early I rise, and I'm a pretty early riser, ask my kids. And I'm a pretty late stayer, but no matter how late I stay up, you know what? I could never get it all done. There aren't enough hours in the day, is what we like to say. And there aren't enough days in the week, and there aren't enough weeks in the year, and there aren't enough years in my life to get that to-do list done. And no matter how efficient I am at completing the task, you know what's sitting there behind that task, right? The next task. The next hill to climb, the most mountain, the next thing that I've got to get done is already waiting for me the moment I complete that task. And I'm looking at your faces and you're like, yeah, I'm retired. I never knew retirement could be so busy. Yeah, that's what happens with work. It is never enough. And again, I'd like to remind you that you could take out the word work. And you can take out the word ministry. I used to have a friend, his name was Jeff, and he used to tell me all the time, be careful of them church folks because they'll work you to death. Okay, the more you do, the more they'll be happy to let you do. Be careful because they'll work you to death. Because it's never, ever, ever enough. I remember when I was 20-some years old, sitting there on the docks of Bonnie Bray Laundry, sitting there talking with my friends. Now, actually, I was only 16. I was making $3.35 an hour. I remember the conversation vividly. My friends and I look and say, the day we're making $20,000 a year, we're set for life. Yeah, you're laughing at that one, $20,000 a year. By the way, that's about $10 an hour if you're working 40 hours. And that's with no, yeah, $20,000 a year. You know what we call that today, right? Poverty. You see, work, it can be very meaningless. All work and no fun makes it meaningless. If all I ever do is work, it is meaningless. If you can never take the moment to enjoy the fruits of your labor, then work becomes this thing that Solomon called toil. Toil. It's the idea that I go and I do and I do and I do and there's nothing in it for me. It becomes not only not satisfying, it becomes that thing that I hate to do. I look at it and I say, I don't want to go back there. I got to go find something else to do with my life. The work is not satisfying me, so you know what we do in our society, right? We switch from job to job to job to job to job. And you know what we haven't figured out yet? All the companies are the same and all the jobs are the same. If that is the driving force of your life, it's going to become toil. You see, because if you can never take a breath, a moment to work, it will burn you out. If you can never take a moment to breathe, if I always just have to focus on the next thing, eventually, you know what? I burn out. And when I burn out, sometimes I burn up. And I take everything around me with me. Again, I'm looking at your faces. You get this topic. Even if you get this topic because we forget. God rested and even Jesus took timeouts. I wrote that on a piece of paper. And I wanted to just throw that piece of paper away because guess what? I don't like to rest. And I don't have time to take timeouts. But even God created for 6 days and rested on the seventh. And you don't want to count, know how many times you can count in Scripture to say Jesus just disappeared and went off by himself to take a moment. Solomon looks around at the world and he sees work is chasing the wind. I hated all the things that I had toiled under the sun because I must leave them to the ones who come after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruits of my toil, into which I have poured my efforts and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave it to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and great misfortune. What do people get from all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain. And even at night, their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. I understand those scriptures. I bet you do too. But I want you to see Solomon's work focus as having an impact on how he sees people. Solomon became selfish in his work. I had toiled under the sun. I must leave them to the one who comes after me. There's that question that Jesus asked in that parable of the rich young fool. Whose things will they be? Here's the better question. Whose things are they already? You see, when I work, then it all becomes mine. And of course, the reality is I can't take all these things with me. So at the end, what good did it really do for me to work for them? Boy, that's logic I bet you don't sit at home and think about very often. And well, not only did Solomon become selfish, he became judgmental. And who knows whether a person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all of the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. I love the fact that Lieutenant Dan, I told you we'd get back to him, thought Forrest was crazy for giving Bubba's family the money. After all, it was Bubba's mama that said, hey, you're stupid for even pursuing Bubba's vision. You know, I'm sure the thought is, where were they when we were out there catching shrimp? And where were they when we were out there weathering the storm? What are they going to do with all that money? We're going to give it, and they're probably going to waste it. Well, you know what Lieutenant Dan forgot when he called Bubba's nuts for giving away that money? First of all, it wasn't Lieutenant Dan's money. It wasn't his. And well, yeah, he showed up to work, but the boat that he showed up to work on belonged to Forrest. And well, that storm that put them in such a good place, God was in charge of the storm that sank the other boats and left Forrest's boat afloat. And by the way, that was the same boat, the same storm that Lieutenant Dan sat at the top of the boat, waving his fist to God and cursing God. Funny, when I feel like I've earned it, I feel like I have the right to say who can possess it and decide who is worthy to receive it. And by the way, we can apply that principle to money and faith. When it's my faith, then I get to decide who I share it with. When it's my church, I get to decide who is okay to sit here in this church. When it's mine, I possess it. I work for it. I earn my seat at the table. Man, how it changes my perspective. I become not a Forrest Gump. I become a Forrest Grump. Because I'm all about it's mine. And you know what? As I begin to look at my life, I develop what I call the commu mentality. You can almost hear Solomon's little, it's not fair, mommy, voice that came out of here with Caillou. By the way, I do not like Caillou. Most obnoxious TV show out there. He's a whiny little baby. But this is what we learned from it's not fair. So my heart began to despair over my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. Again, I can hear the whine in his voice. You see that word, Solomon, aw, poor baby, he's in despair. Oh, I worked so hard for everything I have, and now I'm out here at the end of my life, and I'm going to die, and I've got all these relatives that are circling me like vultures, and I don't like any of them, and why did I waste all of my time working? And you're smiling because you understand this, right? It's not fair, God. After all, I used my wisdom, my knowledge, and my skill to make all of this happen. Really? Where'd you get your wisdom? Y'all remember that story, right? Solomon got his wisdom from God. Where'd you get your knowledge? Well, Solomon got a large dose of that from God, but he also got a large dose from this guy named David. Where'd you get your skill? Well, that's God's too. You see, what happened is when I possess it all, then I possess it all. And I get to decide if it's fair or not. And you know what? It's not fair. It's not fair that Jesus had to give his life on the cross for me. It's not fair. But that's what the work mentality produces, because it's mine. My stuff. I earned it. And here's the funny thing. I don't care how smart he was. He could be the world's best CPA in the universe. Solomon just couldn't make the balance sheet right. This is what he writes. What do people get for all their toil and anxious striving, anxious worry? What do you get for worrying about your job and your economy? Striving with, they labor, with which they labor under the sun. All their days, their work will be grief and pain. Even at night, their minds do not rest. All the days of your life, your job brings you nothing but grief and pain. I see the little bobbleheads going. All the days of your life, you know what? My back hurts from sitting in the chair too much. I have a friend that's a hairdresser. She complains about her shoulders hurting from holding her arms like this, cutting hair all the time. You complain about your knees. You complain about your feet. And then you look at the rest of your life and you complain about there was never enough money. There was never enough to do. I never was happy. I worked my entire life. And look, now I'm out here. I'm ready to retire. And you know what? There are days that jobs get the best of me. And I'm not kidding you. The day ends and I lay there at night in bed. And you know what I'm doing? I'm planning the next day. I can't even shut my brain down at night. I don't feel like I can take a moment to rest. I can't sleep. Why? The job. It's consumed me. I'm chasing the wind for a job. And again, you can take that word out and you can say, I'm chasing the wind ministry. If you're not chasing God, you're chasing the wind. In 1974, Harry Chapin wrote a song entitled Cats in the Cradle. I was a youngin', by the way. I was 6 when this one came out. So I never actually heard Harry Chapin sing it except for on a YouTube video. This song is about a dad's celebration at his son's birth. He follows how the boy grew, and he started out idolizing his dad. However, the dad was always busy working and had little time to interact. I'd like to read to you the last stanza from this song. Here it is. I've long since retired, and my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you have the time. He said, I'd love to, Dad. I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my job's a hassle, and my kids have the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been nice talking to you. As I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up to be just like me. My boy was just like me, chasing the wind. Chasing the wind. Here was a dad, and he had his son, and he thought he was doing such a good job. He provided for his son, and he gave to his son, and he worked, and he worked, and he worked, and he worked, and he worked. And now he is old, and he's looking back at his son, and he's saying, I would like the relationship. And dad said, and the son's now saying the same thing the dad used to say. I'm busy. There's work to be done. I've got things to accomplish. He's forgotten all about Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 26. To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless. Chasing after the wind. So I encourage you today, take a look at your work life. Ask yourself, are you working to live or are you living to work? Have you taken so much time and invested into your career that your career is the only thing that you've got? If I were to take your career away from you, what would you be left with? Solomon tried it. He tried to make working a priority, and he didn't have to. Keep in mind, silver spoon kid here, he didn't have to work a day in his life. But at the end, he said, you know what? It's simply chasing after the wind.